But it's called a prayer of awareness. Awake, O my soul, and know the sacred dignity of your being. Awake to it in every living soul this day. Honor it, defend it, in heart and mind, in word and deed. Awake, O my soul, and know the sacred dignity of your being. Awake, O my soul, awake. Now we've got something a little bit different as a tribute to our wonderful steering committee member, Tom Heck, who went to the other side of the veil last fall. We're going to try to reinstate a pre-pandemic tradition. He composed a blessing, it's only for 15 seconds, for our speakers that we all sang. So let's try it in his honor. Here are the words. I'll say the words. The words are, we bless you as you share your gifts of light, spirit, and insight. We welcome you with joy. And Tim is going to put those words in the chat. And Christine, we're going to have you unmute. She will sing the song aloud while we sing it in our homes. It's a blessing from Word and Life to John Philip and Catherine. Please extend your hands in blessing. Remember, this has to reach to Edinburgh. That's where John Philip is, from Edinburgh, and Catherine's in Montecito. So let's extend our hands, and Christine, please sing it.
We bless you as you share your gifts of spirit, light, and insight. We welcome you with joy.
Now, in the recent sequence of studies we have presented, we face the reality of what is happening in our world. For example, we hit on healing the heart of democracy, followed that with confronting racism. And then we dealt with the pragmatism of love is the way. But now this winter, we're focusing on reawakening to the sacredness of the earth, as well as the sacredness of every human being. Through the eyes and wisdom of contemporary Celtic prophet, John Philip Newell, in his latest book, Sacred Earth and Sacred Soul, we will meet the hidden tradition of Celtic Christianity. But instead of the regular presentation, our much beloved author, John Philip, chose to be in dialogue with his dear friend, our own Catherine Collins. They will introduce and give us an overview of his latest book and then set us off for the next 9 weeks to discuss each chapter in depth. You have read their biographies that came with the link that we sent to you, but let me add a few things about John Philip. Speaks of himself as a wandering teacher, following the ancient path of many lone teachers before him in the Celtic world. Wandering Scots, or Scotus Vagans they were called, seeking the well-being of the world. He has been described as having the heart of a Celtic bard and the mind of a Celtic scholar. Combining his teachings, the poetic and the intellectual, the head as well as the heart, and spiritual awareness, as well as political and ecological concerns. This is the fourth of John Philip's books that Word and Life has chosen to study. In 2011, we did Christ of the Celts. And then in 2012, John Philip himself came in person while we did A New Harmony. And in 2017, we did Rebirthing of God. And by the way, each session was recorded, it's uploaded, and it's available on our website. That's all thanks to Tom Heck, by the way. Catherine, we love you and are so appreciative that you'd said yes to this format. We know that for 35 years, you have led retreats and pilgrimages to the Isle of Iona in Scotland. And you do have a special longtime relationship with John Philip. We promise you will get a much bigger intro on January 27th when you speak to us on Chapter 2, The Sacred Feminine, St. Bridget of Kildare. At this time, John Philip and Catherine lead us into the Celtic wisdom of sacred earth and sacred soul.
I know you and I have connected through Iona, through our love of Iona, and through probably, for you, I don't know how many years, over 50, I believe, because in Chapter 8, you write about walking the shores of Iona with your wife, Allison, as a young man in your 20s. And I also found my way to Iona very early. And there's something about Iona that has awakened something I know in myself. And you speak to it so profoundly in all of your books, but in particularly for me in this one. It's like another page of the mystery that Iona offers has opened and reveals something that lies in memory. It lies in memory everywhere, as you write about in the book. But in particular, something stirs in us, partly because of the ancientness of this little island, this little holy star speck in the sea. So can you say something to us about your own journey to Iona? And then I have a little story I want to say about when I first met you there. But yes, what inspired this book and your work? What gifts have Iona brought you?
Thank you, Catherine and Judith, and so good to be with you all. I'm here in a very dark and cold winter evening in Scotland, and lovely to think of so many of you in the warmth and sunshine of California. Yes, Iona, I often refer to as the home address of my heart or my soul, and I don't think I'm an exception in that at all. I meet many people who feel deeply connected with Iona. There's a lovely book by Fiona MacLeod that was the pseudonym of William Sharp, who wrote late in the 19th century, early in the 20th century. And it's interesting that he chose a feminine name, because I think that part of what he was doing by writing under that pseudonym was sort of accessing a feminine depth within him, a way of seeing, a way of integrating, a way of living in relation to all things that I think is especially true of the grace of the divine feminine within us all. Fiona MacLeod speaks about the name of Iona itself and offers us different thoughts about how that name came into being. One of them that he puts forward is that Iona is maybe derived from the name Iona or John, who in the Celtic world was much loved and remembered as the disciple who leaned against the heart of Jesus at the Last Supper. And in the Celtic world, it was said that he therefore heard the heartbeat of God, and he became an image of the practice of listening deep within ourselves, listening deep within one another, listening within the body of the earth. And I can believe that the island was named after John or Iona, but the favorite that I take from Fiona MacLeod is that the word Iona is derived from the Gaelic Ishona, with this, the SH is pronounced in a soft or almost hidden way in the Gaelic. So Ishona simply means the island of shining, the island of light. And that in my experience is exactly what Iona is. It is an island of shining. I so love something that George MacLeod would always remind us of. George MacLeod, the founder of the modern day Iona community in Scotland, and one of the chapters in the book is dedicated to looking at George. George loved to say that Iona was a thin place, a place where there was a thin separation between the seen and the unseen, between heaven and earth, the divine and the human, spirit and matter. But he was always very quick to say, but that is not to say that every other place is thick. It is to say that Iona is like the sacrament. It is this icon or this place where we are being invited to know the thinness of every place, the thinness of every encounter. I mean, look at the light in one another's eyes in this gathering. This is a light that comes from deep within. It's the light of the divine that we're being invited to look for in one another, in every creature, in everything that has being, and to allow ourselves to be changed, inspired, healed by being in relation to that light that is deep within us and deep within one another, allowing that perception and awareness and inspiration to change the way we view one another, to change the way we are in relationship, the way we handle the sacredness of the earth and every human being. So that, in my experience, is what Iona is. And I think I'd want to emphasize that, yes, it's been a very holy place, a very sacred place for me personally. But when I speak of my experience of Iona, I'm also thinking of the thousands of people from east, west, north, and south that I've had the honor and delight of being with on Iona. And I've witnessed this reconnecting with the light. And you know, I've met many people who on stepping onto the island of Iona immediately find themselves in tears. Yes. And I think that's such a beautiful continuation of one of Columba's words of wisdom to his community in the 6th century on Iona, when he said, pray until the tears come. Because when the tears flow, something is stirring right down on the salt sea of life's origins within us. And I think that Iona is a place that invites us to be alive, more alive, in the very water depths, beginnings of our being.
Yeah, I've encountered people also there, and I don't want to give a lot of emphasis to Iona, but more to the broad scope of this Celtic spirit. But there is something, one woman I came upon as I was walking up to the north end of the island. There's a cross there, a MacLean cross. And she was just bent over in front of the cross, just weeping. And I thought, well, do I leave her? Do I talk to her? And I came up to her and I said, what's going on? And she said, I'm from South Carolina and I'm on a tour of Scotland of the botanical gardens. And we came to Iona for the day. I stepped onto the island and I began to weep. And she said, what's happening to me? I've come to the end of the earth and I'm just broken open. And I said, what is it? What do you feel? And she said, I've come home. I've come home. I've come home. And there's something about this homecoming that speaks to me in the book, John Philip. And there were moments in a number of the chapters where I wept. I wept of being so moved of the nearly 2,000 year legacy we have of this wisdom, of this knowing. And I wept at the way we've forgotten and the way we have split ourselves off and all that we are seeing so clearly in front of us right now as a result. So I just want to thank you for writing the book. And I'm sure for all of us here, it is touching something quite deep and profound and speaks immediately and in an immediacy to what we need to awaken now. So just in this sense of this broader Celtic spirit, as you've seen the weaving, having written the book, what have you further gleaned from this story over centuries? I just know the Christ, our understanding of Christ, is so much of what you do speak about in the book in a number of ways. And I just wondered if there's anything more that you have grounded within yourself in your own understanding through the writing of the book.
Mm. One of the things that is said about us in the Celtic stream, and in particular is John Scotus Eriugena in the 9th century, who I'm thinking of now. And Eriugena says we suffer from soul forgetfulness. That is, we've forgotten who we are. We've forgotten what is at the true heart of our being and at the heart of one another. And that is the unspeakable beauty, dignity, sacredness, creativity of the divine. And Eriugena goes on to say that Christ in the Celtic world is seen as our memory. So we have forgotten who we are, and Christ is our memory. He comes to awaken us to our true depths, to our true identity of being made of the divine. And so to be part of the Christ mystery for one another is to be part of awakening what is deepest in each other. And I love that aspect of the Celtic stream, that a true teacher in the stream is not seen as in any sense sort of dispensing a foreign wisdom. My role, and I think our role to one another in spiritual companionship and responsibility, is first and foremost to liberate, is to set free that spark and light of the divine that's already there. We're not somehow instilling it or bringing something that is foreign. So Christ is seen as the other word that Eriugena uses about the Christ mystery. He sees the Christ mystery as a revelation, and the word revelation comes from the Latin root revelare, which just means to lift the veil. So he sees Christ as lifting the veil to show us our true nature, our true identity, our true divinity. That's what all of these 9 great teachers and teachings, I think, are part of, that unfolding Christ mystery. And I think one of the things that I've been very struck by is the sense of just how living this unfolding is, and to be invited into the wisdom and insights of this tradition is not primarily about going back to something that was. It's about paying attention to how we can be part of this further awakening, further liberating. And my conviction is that great teachers, great teachings and wisdom arise in fresh ways, especially when we need them. And I think that this is deeply true of the Celtic stream of wisdom. It's perception, it's awareness of the sacredness of the earth, sacredness of every human being is something that we desperately and urgently need to be awakening to at this moment in time, as the very future of the planet as we have known it is in question. So this is a tradition that's inviting us not simply to awaken in terms of consciousness, but to allow that consciousness to be part of transforming our relationship with the earth and with one another.
Beautiful. You know, I just know so many of us who are here in this gathering today, and so many that we all know, have in this COVID time, with the backdrop of global climate change, and for those of us here in Santa Barbara, we know the results of climate change events quite intimately and personally in our loss of La Casa de Maria, for example. But in this moment of, we're facing the unknown. And I was very struck by your description of the Peregrini journey, the journey of the Celts on pilgrimage. Because for most of us, our familiarity with pilgrimage is to go to a known place and awaken something of the holy that that brings to us. But what this the white monks of Iona, or however you describe them. Can you say more about this pilgrimage into the unknown? Because I feel that speaks directly to what we each need to discover right now.
Yes, one of the understandings of peregrination, which is often another way of referring to the journey of pilgrimage in the Celtic world, peregrination is about seeking one's place of resurrection, seeking one's place or one's phase or one's time of resurrection. And this is a mystery right at the heart of our Christian inheritance. And I love what someone like Carl Jung reminds us about resurrection, and he says, resurrection is not to be confused with resuscitation. when we're seeking new beginnings in our lives, when we're seeking it together in relationship, when we're seeking it as a spiritual tradition, as a nation, as a species, we're not talking about resuscitation. It's not about bringing life to life again, something that was. It's not about going back to something. Jung says about the Easter mystery in the Christian tradition that the risen Christ was not encountered where his body was laid, which is to say that when we move into resurrection, when we yearn for resurrection in our lives and together, we are yearning for something that we don't yet know and that we can't yet define, and something that exceeds what we could have imagined. And I think that that's one of the things that this stream of teachers and the stream of teaching is beautifully alert to, and that is to open to the imagination, to be made in the image of God is to be made in the image of the great imaginer, the great dreamer. And I love what Thomas Berry, the eco-theologian, said. He said, the universe is so amazing, it must have been dreamt into being. And then, you know, prophet as he was, he went on to say, and we are in such a mess, ecologically, politically, religiously, we're in such a mess, he says, we need to dream the way forward. We need to allow ourselves to imagine ways of seeing, ways of living, ways of being that we haven't yet experienced. So I think the journey to new beginnings, the journey to resurrection is about opening ourselves to what we don't yet know, rather than trying to recreate and something of the past. And I think that, you know, this is a significant moment in the history of our Christian tradition, to speak about one wisdom tradition in particular. But this is a time in which Christianity, as we have known it, so much of it is collapsing. And I think there's a lot of fear around with many, and the tendency or the temptation is maybe to try to recreate, to resuscitate the Christianity that we have known. And I think the wisdom, the guidance that we receive in this tradition is, it's not about going back. It's not about making Christianity great again, to use a sort of parallel to political expressions about going back to something. This is about allowing something new to be born within us, and allowing ourselves to be a further part of awakening, and to, in that sense, to live into our Christhood, to be part of awakeners of one another. Yeah.
So beautiful. Well, I have one more question before we break into our group small breakout rooms. And that is related to this. It seems that all of those you write about and yourself who have stood for their realization, their understanding of this deep subterranean flow of the divine in all things, that there's a trust. When you really behold the sacred in God in all things, there's a foundation of trust, even in what we meet in the unknown. And I think we're being called to discover that, you know, it, what is taking place in the world, we can also trust. The breakdown, the loss, the grief. But also I notice all of these writers, and as you share on your website, you too now are among those who have exiled themselves from the church, so to speak, with, as you state in the book, the millions of others who have exiled from, if not the Christian tradition, a religious tradition, period. But seeking for a humanity, seeking for a way of living that is of greater wholeness. And I know there's curiosity here in this group about your choice. If there's anything you'd like to say about your own leaving of the church, which you share on the website.
Just over a year ago, I relinquished my ordination as Church of Scotland minister. For me, it was primarily a decision that I needed to take for my own sense of integrity as a teacher. And that is the realization that what I most long for, what I'm trying to give expression to, what I'm trying to nurture in you and in myself and in anyone that I'm in relationship with, that these longings, these deepest sort of passions of conviction are not reflected in the doctrinal and confessional teachings of the stream of Christianity that I was ordained into. Most of our great sort of Protestant and Roman Catholic traditions define themselves in terms of the doctrinal utterances of the fourth century, the Nicene Creed, the Apostles' Creed. And I realized that those statements of belief not only sort of fail to give expression to what is deepest in my heart and in my mind. Much of what is said in those statements of faith is contrary to what I am most deeply yearning for. in our relationship with one another and relationship with the sacredness of the earth. So for me, it was an important act of integrity in terms of my own teaching. And I was very clear when I took the decision, and I'm very clear now, that this was not a decision I took in judgment of others. Most of my, so many of my good friends in Scotland and in different parts of the Western world are still in church ministry. And these are people who are doing important sacred things in relation to the building of community, in relation to nurturing acts of justice and care for the earth. So I, in no sense, am wanting to make a statement of judgment against them or to raise myself up above them in any sense. But needing to say and needing to try to speak for this vast diaspora of Christian men and women who began their lives within the four walls of the church and are not re-entering those walls to be fed or to live any longer in that form of religious community, because their deep yearnings around sacredness of earth, sacredness of every human being, are not being fed, are not being nurtured there. So one of the things that I think that happened in the fourth century, when Christianity got into bed with empire, is that we began to cloak Jesus in doctrines and in teachings that were convenient to empire or convenient to religious and political power. Yes. We, in a sense, ran the risk of sort of smothering the wisdom and the true voice of Jesus. So for me, part of the decision to stand much more clearly with this diaspora of men and women who are seeking our place of resurrection, are seeking our new beginning within this fantastic stream of inheritance, this Christ wisdom inheritance, is that we may truly free ourselves from the sort of false cloaking of Jesus. When sometimes I've spoken about the collapse of Christianity as we have known it, and sometimes people have said, but what will happen to Jesus if Christianity collapses? And I always say, we don't have to worry about Jesus. I mean, he's all about resurrection. His teachings, his wisdom, his invitation to be part of this true awakening of one another to the dignity of the divine will continue to live and will find new form. So I find this, you know, this is a very exciting time to be a son of the Christian household. I'm very grateful to be a son of the Christian household. So the decision to relinquish ordination is not me moving away from the depth of my spiritual inheritance as a son of the Christian household. It's rather saying it was important for me to say a clear no to that part of our inheritance that I think has cloaked or covered Jesus' wisdom. And the other thing to say about that is that our Judeo-Christian tradition has always honored and loved and wanted to revere and listen to the voice that calls from the wilderness. And that's not to set myself up as a prophet in the wilderness. It's to say that we belong to a tradition that has really cherished the prophetic. And I think many of us are being called at this moment in time to speak much more from the wilderness than from within the temple, as it were. and to know the freedom, but also the challenges and sometimes the loneliness of the wilderness.
And for us isolating in COVID, we're millions of us around the world are meeting that wilderness place.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily know how to best approach this aloneness, this isolation, this disconnection. But if we understood, if we were to go deeper within, we'd find such riches there. But listen, I noticed the time, and I believe that we're going to go out into breakout rooms. We'll have a chance to come back after the breakout rooms for questions from everyone and for you to share anything else that might have stirred over this this quiet time of listening to one another and of beholding one another as we listen. And I believe Tim's going to put a few questions in the chat that can be prompts for the sharing amongst each of you. So I hand over to you, Tim, and to Judith, and we'll see you all when we're back for questions.
Yeah. Catherine, would you like to read them just before we go? They're there in the chat if you can see that. If not, I'm happy to. Oh, you're muted, I'm sorry.
What have you heard today from John Philip and or have read from the book that has deeply touched you? In what ways have you each experienced this deeper knowing, this reality of knowing the divine of God within all creation, within nature, within one another? And how has these moments or this realization changed you? And lastly, pertaining to this last, these last words from John Philip, what is the Christ we are set free to imagine out of this Celtic perspective? How do we or might we experience this Christ differently in our very hearts and souls?
Wonderful. Thank you so much. I want to just mention that you will get a little pop-up that invites you to a breakout room. You will be randomly assigned by the Zoom algorithm to a group of 3 to 5 folks, no less than 3. And so if you find yourself alone in a room because somebody didn't come in, I will reassign you very quickly to a larger group. And I do apologize once again for the technical difficulties, but we did get it working. I worked with Zoom support to get it going in the middle of the session. So if you have any friends who are trying to get in, tell them to just re-click the link and they can join in. So here we go. We got about 15 minutes or so to spend some time throwing these questions around, and then we'll come back together for some further dialogue.